Good morning. We need, oh yeah, it's better now. Did you have a good meditation? Were you practicing your drishti today and yesterday? Did you see anything different? Good. So Mirabhan is saying because there's lots of space in this auditorium, that those of you at the back can come forward so we can have more of a cozy environment because it's a conversation. So could you come forward and come closer? You can also come in the front and sit in these front sofas, the front row. Thank you. This session is an experiment with a new idea. And like all experiments, there are very few people to witness that experiment. So you are the privileged few who will witness this experiment. The experiment is called Vaha Baba Vaha Drama Moments. And we have 4 instruments that will share those moments with us, and they will also share their stories with us. I will engage them in this conversation, but try to be as invisible as possible. And I want you to be the detached observers to their stories, because I will then invite you to respond to their stories, either through a comment or through a question for further clarification on something they may have said. And so I want you to listen very attentively to hear their stories. Because Baba says that on this path, we have many, many, many happy moments. We have happy moments when we're happy, but we also have wonderfully happy moments when we're facing challenges. So this session is about facing those challenges and being wonderfully happy and saying, thank you, drama. Thank you, Baba, for sending that challenge to me, because it took me to such a height that I've never, would never have imagined possible, and took me to such depth that I would never been able to go to. So with that in mind, now you're going to be alert and you're going to listen, right? And you're going to be the respondents to these 4 panelists. Do I have that agreement? Huh? Good. So here are our beautiful panelists. And the first one here, next to me here on my right, is Brother Manvinder. And he is from Australia, even though he's wearing a turban. There are people in Australia wearing turbans too. And he has been in knowledge for 18 years. And in Australia, he actually coordinates the literature department. And he also helps in the coordination of accounts and other financial matters. So he is a very important instrument in the centers in Australia. Brother Manvinder has been challenged. He has a personal challenge in which he is going through a terminal disease. And he is, that challenge is allowing him to perhaps see his body differently. And we're going to hear about that. Then we have Carolyn. Carolyn, I was in Brazil some years ago, and we received this call from Carolyn, who was supposed to be on tour of Latin America, sharing or doing workshops and retreats on the 4 faces of women. She actually is the initiator of that 4 faces of women workshop retreat idea. And she's in knowledge for 17 years. And she arrived in Santiago, Chile, and called Adi Janki to say she had to have a sudden operation. And it was a major operation. And the challenge of that operation actually landed her in being part of the coordination of the service in Chile. And so we'd like to hear about that, because it landed you in quite an interesting country, a beautiful country, in quite an interesting position. Then we have Tangabai. Did I say that right? Tangabai. Now, Tangabai has been in Gyan for 12 years, and he lives in Sri Lanka. And you remember 2 years ago, on Boxing Day, what happened? The tsunami hit the world. And the Brahmins were there. And we want to hear about that. And of course now, Sri Lanka is going through its own challenges of a civil war. And the Brahmins are still there. So we want to hear how they face that. And then we have Anna. And Anna has been in Gyan for 20 years. And you know, in July of 2006, what happened? Israel attacked Lebanon. And guess where Anna was? In Beirut. Anna originally started her Brahmin life in Greece, and then she actually traveled through the Middle East in countries like Egypt and Kuwait, and there was another one, and Iran a little bit. And then she went to Lebanon, where she helped to coordinate Baba Center there. So you could see the interesting stories that you're going to be listening to. And so I will kind of shut up now and hand the mic over. But the first question I want to ask, and each one will have like 2 minutes to respond to this. What was your Waha Baba, Waha Drama moment while facing your challenge?
Om Shanti. There are many Waha Baba, Waha Drama moments for me, but I would just like to highlight one of them. A funny one. Recently, I had a major operation on my lungs a month and a half ago in Bombay. And they wanted to do a simple surgery by putting a camera in, drilling 3 holes and putting a camera in, about an hour and a half's operation. But they could not access the tumors. So it went on for 8 hours. They had to cut open the whole thing, and just became a major operation and very aggressive. But the people, the doctors, the nurses couldn't believe the how fast physically a person can have recovery. I was in the ICU only overnight. Next day morning, I was in my room, and then day after they took out all the tubes, and I was talking to the Brahmins visiting me on the sofa, and not on my sick bed. And then one of the nurses was new, and she comes in and she says, she looks around, the bed was empty, so she goes off, then she comes back again. She says, where's the patient? And I just looked at her and I said, he's just walked out. And she couldn't believe that I was a patient. And I called her, I said, hang on, I'm the patient. And she said, well, you don't look like a patient. We just had a major operation 2 days ago. And you look quite healthy. I said, I am healthy. I am patient only on your records, but actually I'm not a patient. So how Baba really, really, really helps us in our journey, whatever journey you're going through, he's actually present there, ever present. So there were many moments which I have been through in last more than a couple of years now, and that I've seen Baba beside me all the time. And that's really carrying me through. So at the moment I'm on a, I'm not fighting, but I'm on a war at the moment because it's just coming back again. So, but really, do I look sick?
No.
So, so it's just Baba's blessing, and Baba's actually, I feel he's trying to prove something to me, to the Brahmins around me, and to the world where, you know, where I have contacts with my Lokic world, and also my friends and relatives. He's just trying to prove something, and I don't know what, but in the medical field, it, you know, they say it's a terminal illness. It's not an ordinary cancer, but it's like the most aggressive cancer that, you know, medical people can actually think of. But it's going quite fine. Thank you.
When Sister Gayatri asked for the Waha Baba Waha drama moment, really I'm scanning, I can't think of just one because my time since leaving Australia and landing in Chile is full. And maybe when I tell the story, that will be more clear. I think really at one Waha Baba and drama moment is, again, is operation related. Because I was in a very dangerous situation unexpectedly health-wise in Chile. And I'd been running a one-day retreat the day before after being in Brazil for 3 weeks on kind of non-stop service. And then Chile, we had many programs and a retreat on the weekend and then a one-day retreat on the Monday. And I remember I would, with the group, I'd say, okay, so if you just, you know, like to reflect on that and discuss amongst yourselves for about 10, 12 minutes, and I'd go down the hall and lie on my bed and then come back and go, so how was that? You know, and find out. And I was really at a very difficult point physically. Many, many moments in, like, the people, and Sister Angelica, who's the instrument there, knows anyone and everyone who's the best in every field, and if she doesn't, she can find out. So I felt very safe with Baba's, certainly Baba's instruments and Baba's help. But she doesn't speak very good English. She does now, but she didn't then. And she was my translator in the hospital. So I felt very much Baba's hand. Because in preoperative care, and the anaesthetist came to talk to me and ask what kind of, you know, did I want to be completely knocked out or whatever. And Angelica was translating medical terms and she couldn't even translate Baba's terms, hardly. So we always thought it was really wah Baba, wah drama that I didn't have my leg amputated as an accident because of the translation. But I think probably one of the most extraordinary things that told me it was the right place for me to be and to stay, I'd been there a few months, 2 months maybe, 6 weeks even, and I got an email that came through my work website and said, hello, this is so-and-so from McKinsey and Company, this is a global consulting firm, wondering how we can contact Carolyn Ward. We're in Chile and we want her to do some work for us. And I sat there in Baba's center going, how is this possible? No, these people don't know I'm here and they're wanting me to go and work for them in Chile. And I'm sitting here in Baba's center, and it turns out it was like 15 minutes walk from the office. So it's a series of ongoing miracles, and they're just, you know, few simple ones, but really shocking and going, wow, you know, this is how it's meant to be here.
Om Shanti, good morning. Wah Baba, Wah Drama. I got my knowledge in Colombo, and my lucky wife was in at Jaffna. So I intended to take her also to take the knowledge. I went to Jaffna. The first question my lucky wife asked, with whose permission do you got the knowledge? So I smiled at her and kept silent. And within 2 months' time, I took her to Colombo and she also got the knowledge. This is Va Drama, Va Baba. Again in 1997, I met Baba, that is the Shivratri. By unknown reason, I was asked to stay at Trichy. I stayed for 5 years at Trichy. In the last year, that is 2002, I also had a major operation in prostate gland. The doctor said, you inform your kids and kins, and they must be by your side. But I was at Trichy alone, without my family. But I told the doctor, yes, my kids and kins are at Trichy, and you need not worry. The operation took place. On the following day, the doctor came and asked, how are you? I said, I am fine. So he was surprised. So my family at Trichy, there is Brahmin family at Trichy, looked after me, and I was all right. And last year, I got a warning letter from a rival group, that is, the ethnic problem is going on. You will be interrogated, and you will be dealt with. So I informed my NCO. NCO contacted RCO. Immediately I got the message, you closed down the center. I am a little worried. Okay. On the following morning I got another message, no, you carry on. So even now, the Baba, I am with Baba, and Baba is helping, I am all right. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Like Caroline was saying, there were many moments during the experience of the war in Beirut that definitely you could say there were one moments. But I think one of them was the first moments of the chains, because it was quite dramatic actually. Why? Because we had just finished two major things. One was the renovation of the center, which had taken us 1 year. And the other is the coordination of the organization of a retreat for Sister Genti. She was coming on the 18th of July, and 13th, the war started. So that day, I was telling one sister who had come to help us that today we finished everything. And it's quite unusual to finish planning a retreat some days before the retreat starts. It was the first time it happened in my Brahmin life. So, and I told her, okay, today we're going to have a different day. It's going to be for us a meditation, you know, a little bit more relaxing. And the change was so dramatic from having this spirit of having accomplished something such auspicious, and everybody was really flying because we were really looking forward for this retreat with Sister Genti. And it was a retreat for Middle East. It was quite a big retreat. We were expecting 80 people from Gulf to come. So, and the change was as if when you switch on or when you change the channels on the TV, and it's a complete change. You know, the actors change, the costumes change, the scenario changes, everything changes. This is how big the change was from, you know, preparing the gifts and all the spirit of the retreat changed to war. Because after a couple of hours that I had told Sister Joanna from Kuwait that yesterday is going to be, we're going to celebrate, we finished with everything very successfully, we heard the first bombs. And we didn't expect it. such an unexpected scene. And the interesting thing is that the last 3 days, somehow we didn't have access to the Sakar Murlis, so we were reading Avyakt Murlis. And in the in all 3 Murlis that we were choosing randomly, Baba was saying, everything will happen suddenly. Everything will happen suddenly. And then here you are, and what we have been hearing for so long, and somehow, although we have full faith that this is a reality, this reality goes in the back of the mind and becomes a little bit of theory. And then here you have Baba saying this and actually happening so suddenly. So this was in one moment.
Thank you. That wonderful moment, really wonderful. And I could see, as I listen, I can actually hear the story behind those moments. They're big stories. And so what I'll do, in order to make it a little bit more interactive, each panelist will have about 7 minutes to share this bigger story. Well, give you a little bit of a, that was like a 60 seconds ad. And now you're going to go into a 7 minutes look, deeper look into that ad, as it were, that advert. And so I'll start, and maybe I'll ask you to zero in on certain specific areas so you stay within those areas of your experience. And then as each one speaks, after the 7 minutes, I'll then ask you to respond to that person. And so it's a little bit of an interaction. So you listen to them with that idea, and we'll have one respondent to each person because the time is so limited. So let me start with, I have to look at your name again, Tangabai. And Tangabai, I know that when the tsunami took place, you were in the center, and the water came, the wave happened, it took a lot of people and buildings and things with it, but it came and almost stopped at Baba's center. Now, Baba had said that we have to face challenges from our bodies, from civil and nuclear wars, but also from natural calamities. So within 7 minutes, could you tell us that story of what happened on the 6th of December, and how you dealt with it in Sri Lanka?
Om Shanti. This tragic incident took place the following day after Christmas, that is on 26, 2004. It happened only for 15 minutes. Nearly about 50,000 souls left their body. And the center that I am, be there, is at Eastern Province. And the center is close by the sea, nearly about 1/4 kilometer. So we normally have the class, morning Murali class. And luckily on that day, we were churning Daddy Janki's class. That is, it ends up at 8 a.m. So this was happening, but we did not know anything about the sound or anything, because we were very calm inside the center, and nobody got any message. Only one brother got a telephone call, and immediately he, without telling us, he left with his Lokik wife, and he left to some other place with a car. So we did not know. So by the time we saw, some people were running on the lane here and there. So we noticed that, and I went and asked, what is happening? They said, the water is coming. So I yoked them. So is that water is having leg to walk? And they said, no, you go and see. So I went with my family, with my Brahmin family, and see that it is stopped nearly about 100 meters away from the center. So everything was, there is nearly about 150 meters, houses and everything was crushed away. Nothing was there. Everything was taken away by the tsunami. So we didn't have any hurt. Other than another Brahmins in Sri Lanka left their body. Only three Brahmins lost their house, and two Brahmins lost their belongings, and the house was little damaged. And if the Brahmins left after the Murali, definitely they might have confronted some difficulties. But Baba, on that day, asked me to churn up Jangi's class, and they were in the center till 8 a.m. So nothing happened to the Brahmins. And they, on the following day, they stayed in the house, those who have lost the belongings, and those who are afraid to stay in the houses, they came and stayed in the center for 8 days, peacefully and calmly, without having any trouble. We had the daily class, and again they told us, tsunami is coming. So one of the Brahmins came and asked me, come, brother, we will go to some place far away. I told them, you have fear, you go. But I will never leave the center unless and until the water enters the center. Brother also told me, our NCO told me, if you need, you can leave the center. But I told that brother, no. If you want, you go. I was in the center, and the people who came and asked me also, they stayed in the center, and nothing has happened to our center. And nobody was hurt. And Baba has built three houses for the people, the Brahmins who lost their houses, and they renewed the damaged houses also. So ethnic problem that I told you earlier, it is going on for the last 10 years, 20 years, it is going on. The trouble is not ending. And I am also staying in a place, eastern province, very critical place. So there is the main factor is divided into two, and the opposition party is in our region. So I got a letter on last June, intimated me, there is a warning, last warning for you. And you have gone to Colombo for accounts meeting, but you have gone there to fund the LTT. So you will be interrogated. You will be suitably dealt with. So I was a little scared, and immediately I informed the NCO. NCO informed RCO, and RCO informed NCO to inform me to close the center and run in a separate house. So I am a little worried. The last 8 years it was running, so why at this time? So I said, Baba, why all these things? So I stayed there. Early morning before 6 a.m., NCO rang up and told me, no, you carry on. DD informed me to carry on the center without any fear. So until this time, this everything, the fire is going on, bombing is going on, everywhere death is going on, but none of the Brahmins, neither the center nor the Brahmins is affected so far. They are all very happy. They are coming even for 4 a.m. for Amritwala without any fear. Because there is Va Baba, Va Drama. Om Shanti.
Wonderful experience, because Sri Lanka, as you heard, not only have natural calamities, but it's also facing a civil war. And you heard a bit of both in what Brother Thanga just said. Anyone wants to respond to him? Anyone from the panel wants to respond to what he said? I do. I just cannot believe that a tsunami was happening, and you were churning Daddy Janki's class, which is a tsunami in itself. And you were not aware of that. What was it? How high was that wave? 35 feet? 36 feet? How high was that wave? It was really
really high. And you didn't even have a little bit of fear when you heard that that was happening? I don't believe that. I would have been scared.
Actually, you won't believe that none of the Brahmins know me heard about the sound. Because the daddy's class is more sound than the tsunami. That we were churning, then we were left our mind in that daddy's class. So we didn't care, we didn't know anything about it. You won't believe it. It is happening nearly about 150 meters, the water has come. Our center is nearly about 100 meters away from the water. Even that, we didn't hear anything. You can ask any one of our Brahmins, they will say like that. The same way, because the class, we were highly concentrated on the class and we didn't know anything. And the Baba is there. We know that Baba always help us. That is why I didn't hear anything on the day itself.
Wonderful result. Baba would be very proud, especially Daddy Janki. Now, if you want to conquer matter, you churn Daddy Janki's class, right? That's the moral of this story. 24/7, right? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay, so we'll move on to the next panelist's story. I'll go to Carolyn. Carolyn, I'd like you to focus on when you were told that you had to do an operation in a foreign land, where you didn't have the language, you didn't know the language, and you had someone interpreting for you who didn't know, as you said, in your moments. What it is you as an individual had to deal with in terms of facing that particular challenge. Tell us the story of you know, how you were able to deal with it without succumbing to all the uncertainties that appeared to be around you in that moment.
I think it was easier than it might have been because I'd been leading up to something happening. I knew change was happening in my life. And I'd closed a business I'd been running for 10 years. I packed up my house, put everything in storage, and I was waiting. And I said, okay, Baba. You know, I felt Baba gave me the signal to close all that. And I didn't know what was next, but I knew change was coming. And I'd been invited to go to Poland and a few places in the beginning of 2005, and then I was back to Australia for a few weeks, and then to Brazil, Chile, Argentina, Italy, India. So when I was very unwell in Brazil, and then I kind of made it through to Chile and did all of that, and I was hemorrhaging very badly, and it got to a point where it was dangerous, and I waited. I thought, okay, I go straight back to Australia. And I started doing a kind of analysis of the benefits of having it done in Chile or in Australia, or Chile or Australia. And in the end, it didn't matter what I wrote on the paper, I couldn't go on the plane, and really it was very dangerous, and the doctor just said, okay, into the hospital. The two doctors I had, one was like a goddess. She was so firm and so gentle and so loving. She spoke English, so that was really helpful. And the surgeon was very sweet. And really, I just felt looked after the whole time. And because I knew change was happening and I was being led by Baba, I really felt that I knew this was part of a process. I didn't know I'd stay in Chile at that point. But I think one of the most critical moments for me was I was lying in the room that I would stay after the operation. And I went very deep within myself because I thought, wow, no one in the world knows I'm about to have this operation. None of my Lokic family, and I'm very close with them. None of my Brahmin family in Australia. At this point, we hadn't called to Brazil. I thought, really, it's me and Baba and this new family. who I knew for 5-6 days, 1 week in Chile. And they were very wonderful, and they still are very wonderful. But I was really alone, me and Baba, and I thought, wow. I do tend to the dramatic sometimes, so I thought, wow, maybe I could leave the body. And I thought, no, really, actually I could. It's a reason, you know, hysterectomy is a reasonably common operation, but you never know, things happen. And so I started going very deep inside and saying, Baba, am I ready? If it's time for me to go, am I ready? And I could feel Angelica was sitting watching me, and I really had a few tears came down my cheeks as I thought, I don't get to say goodbye to anyone. And I started thinking, wow, this is Brahma Baba, except he was even more. But, you know, this sense of it's me and Baba and that's it. And then I thought, okay, how's my effort? Well, you know, there are bits I could have done a lot better. But it's not a time for regret. I have to celebrate that I've done, given my sanskara package, and, you know, I've done the best that I could do at this point. And really, I'm inside with these sort of tears from thinking I don't say goodbye if I'm going. And that was very affirming, you know, to say, okay, I can still improve my effort, given that I will probably survive this operation. But if it's time, Baba, okay, I'm ready, I'll come. And I felt so free. And then I had a very interesting question came in my mind, was, if you had the choice, if you're on the operating table and the soul leaves the body, all these stories, you know, that people talk about, and, you know, you're watching the operation happen, and you can choose, do you come back or do you stay, you know, or do you leave? And this question came in. I didn't think it. It came from my sort of deepest subconscious. If you have choice, what will you do? And I felt at the time that I went, oh, of course I'd come back, of course, you know. But I knew it wasn't a true answer. It wasn't like a deeply understood response. But I ignored it. It sat like something on my shoulder for the next 2-3 weeks, until someone came and met with me and said, oh, you know, in a new age sort of reflection on the body and the soul relationship, and said, you know that losing blood is a lack of willingness to live. And this question went in front of me. And I had to face the fact that I wasn't living fully. From the outside, anyone would say, wow, you know, you got this life and you do that and very active, and but not with love. Not with a heart filled with the joy of this confluence age, or just living, you know, moment, really not appreciating. Gayatri was talking last night about the appreciative eye. And I had to face this and say, this is a hopelessness that has been on my back as long as I can remember in this life. And so it was such a very wonderful chance to see disabilities within the soul in a very gentle way. Because I was in a place that was very supportive, and you know, I couldn't move so much, so I got to really be with myself and be quiet. And that was very, very powerful. All the blessings that I received once, you know, we'd called to Brazil and Daddy gave me beautiful blessings, and I remember Gayatri saying, you know, the crucifix becomes the thorn, as Baba says, and it felt really like that. And the operation, you know, we do service now with this hospital because the matron has become a regular visitor to the centre, because in a similar way to Manvinda, you know, they said, how come every time we go in this room, you're happy and it's, you know, no matter what, and you're up, and it's really, I could feel the blessings from the family. this shift for me, the biggest shift was this appreciative eye. And I was in as a guest, you always see but don't see, and it's very much easier than where you live. And I experienced the miracle for about, I don't know, maybe it's about 4 months, 5 months. I experienced being a miracle. I experienced the miracle of being, that I had no expectations, I had no judgments, I had no role, which was very helpful, no positions, no mental constructs, no language, which is also helpful. And just by being and being in the experience of love, I watch magic happen. Transform. Things transform in the environment around me, in the family. And then many, many other miracles. Many things happened, you know, I can't even go into with time. But for me, this miracle of being and the miracles that happen from that. And of course, you know, I lost it after some time, and now it's that I had the opportunity to experience just being and the beauty of that and how it creates beauty. So, wa baba wa drama, absolutely.
So, Irene, you want to come take the mic and ask?
Wow, the juxtaposition, putting beside each other hopelessness and celebration and fear of dying and wanting to go. I just love the combination because it tells us that even when we're feeling our worst or our best, that a shift is, we just have to open up to it more, as you seemingly did. And then more comes. So I was appreciating all the different, this, that, but it all came around so beautifully. Thanks.
Om Shanti. I had the pleasure of meeting Caroline this morning, and I didn't know I was going to hear this story, but after listening to it, I think it would be a wonderful program of the miracle of being. And I was wondering how you might maybe somehow teach or do service in that way of how to keep that experience of that unconditional love and being in that experience more than in the judgment part of what's going on around it. So anyway.
Julie, I think once I recover that again, then I might be able to. I lost it, and not totally, but to
some extent. I bet you can, though. So thank you very much.
So wonderful. Now I'll move to Anna. And, of course, Anna has a completely different story to tell us, which is, I think, actually Anna was the one that inspired this panel because I remember being in New York and wondering what was happening to her because CNN was covering this war like 24/7, like around the clock. And I cannot imagine what it must have been like for you. And I don't even know what to ask you to zero in on. So I'd leave that to you. What aspect of it you would like to share with us? But maybe I'll prompt a little bit by saying that I know you left on one of the last ships out to Greece. And that must have been an interesting decision to make. Do I stay or do I leave?
Um, Well, the very fortunate thing is that I was in constant communication with Daddy Janki and Sister Genti at least once a day, and of course a lot in my mind. And so, but it's true that it was myself that had the thought, because also Daddy and Sister Genti were receiving the news from me, so they could judge only from what I was telling them, together with their own, of course, spiritual power. I think from the very beginning I experienced a lot of clarity. Somehow there were not many thoughts in my mind. I didn't find myself in dilemmas. I didn't find myself in dilemmas very often, whether it was practical aspects or other decisions that had to be done, because there were moments that there were decisions quite critical in a sense. I remember one incident when we were meditating. We were coming together every morning, and although the center is very near to downtown, where a lot of bombs were there falling, and so we could hear them. And I remember one evening we were meditating, and it was a few of us, like four of us, and the area was actually almost, I mean, nobody was there in that neighborhood, downtown. Maybe only us. And there was a sister who is not really a Paka Brahmin, more in touch, but because she lives nearby, she would come. All of a sudden, she received a phone call, and someone was telling her that, where are you? Probably the conversation was like this: where are you? Are you in downtown? It's very dangerous. What are you doing? Probably she answered, I'm meditating. And the answer was, just leave, because they're bombing the port, and the port is like 5-10 minutes walking distance from where we are, and you can hear the bombs. It's not what we see in the films. And and so and she's in panic, and she's telling me somehow she enters the room, the meditation room, and in a sense she makes it clear that we have to stop with her presence, that something is going on very important. And she looks at me a little bit aggressively, like, what are we doing? What are you making us do here, meditating? Why, I mean, you're responsible in a sense. We should run away. And I remember there was such peace and stability inside, and I knew that this was the right thing to do. I don't remember any thought of fear or of panicking. What I told her is that it's your choice to be here. If you want to stay, you're most welcome. If you want to go, you can go. If we have to go, we have to close the center. I told her it would take us some time, because every time we're leaving the center, we didn't know whether we'd come back. Every time we're leaving the center, to close it properly, everything, so it would take some time. And all I'm saying is that, yes, there was in many sudden moments like this a lot of clarity. But also when we had to leave the country, again, it was clear that this was the right thing to do. And I remember some process in between in meditation. And this was about the motives, actually. It was connected with the motives. I was checking myself, why am I staying? Because I'm expected by everyone? And I was trying to go deeper and deeper in terms of the honesty of the motives. Yes, I knew at the end that I was staying because I wanted to be loyal to Baba, and because I was feeling so much love for others. Because in the process, really, I mean, those days, somehow the self was not a priority. And I remember what Sister Mira shared with me very briefly at some point, that in such occasions, one becomes more selfless and more love emerges. And so I knew that when the time would come to go, I wouldn't have any questions in my mind whether it was the right thing to do or not, because I think this desire to be selfless somehow makes things clean and right for you. And if I have the time, can I say something that was a little bit funny actually, at the same time, because we kept receiving phone calls from the Greek embassy telling us, you should go, everybody has gone, why you are staying? When everybody else was trying desperately to go out and they couldn't. There were thousands of many different nationalities that they were trying to go out and they couldn't. And here you have the Greek embassy offering you every day a different means of escaping. And I was reminded of this joke. Maybe some of you know this joke, where there is this devotee, in essence, that has such faith in God. Devotee has so much faith in God, and so when the flood is taking place, the help comes in the form of a boat in the beginning, and then he says, no, I have faith in God, and then another boat or another means comes, and then he says, no, God will save me, my God will save me, no need. And at the end, the essence of the joke is that the helicopter comes, and he says, no, my God will save me, and then he finds himself next thing to in front of God, because he left his body because of the flood. And then he goes very happy that he goes to heaven, but with this little complaint in front of God, why he didn't save him, although he had so much faith. And he says, God says, but I sent you this, I sent you this, I sent you a bus, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter, and still you didn't. So at some point, really, I was laughing, because this was a very similar case. Every time the Greek embassy was calling us, the first day they had a very nice bus, the second day they have a very nice ship. I thought, if they tell me anything about helicopter, I'll definitely go. And so when the time came to leave, it was the only thing to do. There was no question whether we should do something else. And practically speaking, there was no fuel in the country those last days of the war, because it was towards the end of the war when we left. And nobody was coming, actually. And we were there in the center. They didn't have the fuel. And we're meditating and we're happy to be there, but there was no any point anymore. So why should we risk, in a sense, being there? But I remember when we were in the ship, and it was really the last ship that all of a sudden they put, because they told us, you're very lucky, because we're not planning to put this ship. And we left as refugees through Cyprus. And we didn't pay any money to go to Greece at all. So I remember that I was looking Beirut, you know, from this military ship, and the feeling was that we had done our best. And I remember there was such subtle happiness and fulfillment, like a golden light, you know, inside, outside, and this feeling that you have used your time and your efforts for God.
Very touching, isn't it, of what Baba's instruments go through, but the care that he takes of those instruments and also of the people being in those situations. Anyone wants to respond?
Om Shanti. Thank you all for sharing your stories. I've been on the edge of my seat listening to your story. I want to bite my fingernails. Were you afraid at any time? I've thought about you during the war, and I didn't know you till today. But I wondered, I'm actually Palestinian, So I know what it's like back in that area, and I wondered if you were afraid at all, at any time.
The answer is very ready, because I had this question in my mind, how come there was not one moment of fear? It's like God had caught my mind and he was in control. Stability, clarity. No, there was no fear. And now, if you ask me now, if I'm ready to go, I would say, no, I would like to stay. At that time, it was like a different person, a different stage. If someone told me, you may die now, it wouldn't make any difference. It was a very interesting stage, a different stage. And I think this is also very much connected with the family, because I kept receiving so many emails, and the energy from the love from the family, it was this war was for me a gift to show me the power of Baba and the family, because in what other occasion the whole family at some point would think of you. I mean, this was obvious. I could feel it and I could see it in the emails. So, no fear.
I remember receiving the emails that were being circulated around at that time. And I remember feeling that stability and calmness that was coming from you. And I also felt that it was really lovely actually hearing how you were, how things were, what things were happening and what you were going through. I felt it was at that time, at such a difficult time, you were able to send out that information. And I really felt like I was there with you. It was lovely. Thank you.
Could you make it quick, because we just have one more.
This is a question to Anna, but also it relates to everyone, really. I think what I'm interested in is how we continue after a wah moment. How we continue after a wah moment. It's like you were describing you were in a different stage, and then what do you do with that in your spiritual efforts afterwards? And is there a letdown? It could apply to any of your situations, and you know, what do you do after that?
That's a wonderful question to end the panel with. So now I'll ask Manvinder Bhai to share with us. And of course, you know that the illness that Manvinder Bhai is going through is current in his life. And so the challenge that he's having to face right now, it's like having a dance with your body. So tell us about the rhythms of that dance. I suppose sometimes it's in discord, sometimes it's harmonious, sometimes it's a bit rocky. So tell us about it. You choose that moment that you want to talk about, and tell us about it in 7 minutes.
Thank you, Gautama. Yeah, it's been a long journey. It started in 2003, December, and when Dadi Janki had just come and gone from Australia on a short visit. And it was kind of a shock to get this news. The facts that came from the doctor, from the ultrasound people, it said the appearances are of a worrisome sarcoma. So obviously I didn't know what sarcoma was, what the worry was. But then the doctors were quite concerned, and I wasn't concerned at all, because I didn't know the effects of it. And I was like hale and hearty, no problem, running around doing Baba's service. And I just couldn't kind of relate to it. I couldn't believe it, that actually it's happening to me. And but then they asked me to go for the biopsies and all that. That was in my leg, upper thigh. And and it was confirmed. And then it started sinking in slowly. Actually, it's happening. You know, actually, it's quite dangerous, and anything can happen. So they asked me to, you know, get operated straight away. And somehow I just had a feeling that, no, I want to check with Baba. I want to, you know, be connected and see what I should be doing. And luckily on that night, Baba was coming, 15 December. And without my giving any inputs, Senior Ramesh Bhai, when he gave the bouquet of flowers to Baba, he mentioned to Baba that Manminder's health is not very good. And Baba actually said, Baba got the news. And then Ramesh Bhai asked, Baba, any message for Manminder? And Baba said, inform the child that he is under Abhik Babdara's canopy of protection. There is nothing to fear about. It will be like pulling hair out of butter, as though it's already happened. Wow, that was a wonderful, wonderful news for me. And then everything started coming in my mind that, you know, I'm going there for service. I really have to serve the doctors, serve the nurses. And actually, it was really a piece of cake. They excised the tumor from the leg, you know what Brahmins are like. They, you know, flock around bringing tolis and food and breakfast and dinners, and it was unlike anything of that sort ever happened in the hospital. There were like 80 visitors in 6 days' time. So, and the nurses were amazed. They said, you are a star patient. You know, they were quite taken by that. And there was a dietitian, she actually would go past my room, and she knew that we don't eat what she was offering. But somehow she always had that pull to come in, because we used to have world meditation hour in my room, and we used to have a lot of meditation in my room all the time, and a lot of fun as well. And so she comes in one day and she says, my husband would like to meet you. I said, he's most welcome. I don't know what the reason was, but anyway, I said, yeah, he's most welcome. So then her husband comes with a little boy, and we have a good chat for about an hour or so. And guess what? He started doing the course after that. So I was thinking, I said, if this guy comes into Brahmin family, I'm going to tell him, look how much I had to go through to give you this Brahmin birth. So it was fun. Now he's done the course, and I don't know, because I've not been in Australia for almost more than a year. So, yeah, then after that everything was fine. I had the radiation and everything. It was all okay. But then there was routine checkups going on. Then 2005, June, they did the normal scans, and they found there were 9 tumors in the lungs. And the, you know, sarcomas, if you read the history of sarcomas, they are very aggressive. And they are 1 in 1,000. If 1,000 people have cancer, 1 has sarcoma. So, and it's quite aggressive. So that was another shock. So I had to deal with that shock for some time. But somehow, whenever I went into Baba's room, it was always the image that I saw was a smile on his face. Always I felt Baba smiling. And I was trying to get the message. And the thoughts that I was getting all the time was that everything will be okay, everything will be okay. And he was trying to basically, I feel, was making me unshakable. So every time, you know, you go through these kind of tests and examinations, scans and all that, you get some reports, they're not good reports, you get a shock. So anyway, then the doctors here decided, again the same situation I was in as what Caroline was mentioned was, that what shall I do? Shall I go to India or shall I get the operation in Australia? So, but I had to come to India and to meet Baba, and also my Lokiks were very keen that I should come back and visit them. And everyone in Australia was saying, don't get anything done in India. Whatever, promise us that you'll come back and get your operation done in Australia. I said, okay, we'll see. So when we, and I came to India, the whole energy shift and everything was okay. And I found Dr. Ashok Mehta, who's a BK, and he's a qualified surgeon, oncologist, and he actually very experienced. So somehow the energy shift was there that I should get the operation done here. So on 9th of January last year, they cut open the right lung, and within 2 days, I walked down to Baba's room, you know, our own hospital in Bombay, and at Amrit Vela, and it was again Baba was smiling, and I got those thoughts. Baba said, as though he was telling me, the Almighty Authority is with you. There is nothing to fear about. There's Almighty Authorities with you. There is nothing to fear about. So with those thoughts, I came up to my room, and Dr. Pratap was there with me, and he said, I told him, I said, can you ring Ashok Mehta now, and could you ask him to operate the second lung today? He said, but we have planned after 10 days. You haven't even recovered. I said, no, I'm okay. Can you please tell him? So he rang Ashok Mehta and he said, look, if patient is happy, I'm happy. But don't ask Manvinder not to eat anything for the next 6 hours. So the second operation was done on the third day from my first operation. And I went back into the ICU after the operation. And the ICU nurses and doctors were amazed. Is there any complication that you come back? What's the problem? And they said, no, this is the second operation he has had. So again, I was overnight in ICU, next day morning back into my room. And after 7 days, I landed in Shantivan, met Dadis and all the seniors and came back to Global Hospital. And how Baba has been like literally, you know, carrying me in his arms, caring for me, you know, through the Brahmin family. And it is amazing that physically I haven't had that pain and suffering that normally a person would go through. And like when they decided I should go for the chemotherapies, and this chemotherapy which they had, the regime that they had made, was the most aggressive chemotherapy that anyone can have. You know, normally they have 1 day chemo, 2 days chemo, then they have 3 weeks recovery, then another 2 days, and like six cycles they go through. So they had given me like 11 hours of IV drip going into the body on the first day, 6 hours on the second day, 6 hours on the third day, 6 hours on the fourth day, and 6 hours on the fifth day. And it was very, very aggressive. And you wouldn't believe this, I vomited not once. A lot of nausea and all that, but not once. Normally, I've seen people sharing their stories, and they vomit blood and all that sort of thing. They go through so much. But Baba has really, really, really taken care of this body. And then after the chemo in September last year, we went for the checkup again. Everything was clear, all fine. And then they said we should check up every 3 months. And on 11th of December, we went for another scan. And guess what? There were 4 tumors come back in both the lungs. So that is the kind of aggression these kind of tumors have. And Ashok Mehta said, let's operate the lung again now. I said, no, I want to go and meet Baba. So on 13th of December, I flew back to Madhuban. 15th December, I met Baba. And actually, before I met Baba, I went to Baba's room that morning. Again, in Baba's room, Baba was smiling, and Baba said, everything will be okay. And when I physically went up on the stage to take drishti from Baba, and actually Baba repeated that, everything will be okay. And that gave me a lot of strength and power. Came back on the 19th of December to Bombay again. On 24th December I had this operation that I was sharing before. And 30th December I came back to Madhuban. 31st I met Baba again. So it was like, you know, people were amazed that so many operations happening in a short span of time and everything is just going on. And again, the latest, they wanted to start another type of chemotherapy, which is more aggressive on the tumor and less aggressive on the body. So we had, you know, various opinions from Singapore, America and everywhere. So before we started the chemo, they found that there was some shadow in the right lung again. And they thought it's an infection or something. So I went to Ahmedabad and got the scan done. It was confirmed that it's come back again in the right lung. And in a big way. So biggest size tumor in the right lung. So they said, we can't operate now because it's too soon to operate again. So let's do the chemotherapy in a more aggressive way. So, but it's amazing. I physically don't feel at all anything, you know, but the problem is seen on the scans. So that's what the doctors are concerned. So the first cycle of chemo has started now. And we'll be going through the second cycle again after 3 weeks. So in the whole journey that I'm just going through now is actually what I have taken and what I have learned is that letting go actually in a big way. You have to really let go and leave it to Baba. Not have any doubt, any fears, and see the magic, Baba's magic. And also, the other thing which I have realized is that no one can ever help you. We think so-and-so is helping and so-and-so is helping. No, actually, it's except Baba, no one can actually help you. You know, when everything fails, it's only Baba. So why go to Baba at that moment? Go in the very first moment itself. And he helps me always at the last moment. That's what is my experience. Like, a simple example, like the last operation I had. Previous times, all the time, there's been somebody always helping me, traveling with me and all that. But this time, it just so happened, it was very, very busy time in Madhuban, and there was no one to bring me back from Bombay to here. And I've been getting calls from Australia, we'll take a flight from here and come and help you, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, wait. Just leave it to Baba. And one day before, somebody rings me from Bombay and he says, who's taking you to Madhuban? I said, no one at the moment. He says, you want me to find out if anyone can go? I said, yes, that'll be good. So they found out who were going in train. So they got someone to cancel the train tickets and they booked them as a flight and they actually brought me to Madhuban. So literally, you know, when we take things on ourselves, it's a problem. You have to go through a lot because of karmic accounts and all that. But if you just leave it to Baba with 100% faith and see the magic happening. And that's my very deep experience and realization. And then letting go. Just let go. So that was, in short, my journey. Thank you.
I found myself gripping my notebook as I was listening to Marvinder Bhai and his story. Now, I know we've reached 12:30, but anyone wants to respond very quickly? Move to respond? Or should I just move into our concluding? Thank you. Gosh, they were all so moving. And I think I'm privileged to have been the one to moderate it because you've enriched my life. And I also feel that this whole auditorium, and especially those of you who actually chose to be here today, has created, you're very special, each and every one of you, because what you have done is created a kind of an incubator, a cocoon, in which a lot of healing has taken place, both for you and also for each and every one of you. So we are very, very happy that you choose to be here with us today. The way I'd like to end this today is to ask you a few questions, but I want very fast answers. So it's going to be a snappy, like a one-word answer. And I'll also include your question that you asked. I wrote it somewhere. Okay. What recommendations would you share with all of us in terms of dealing with your challenges? What would you say to us if we were to go through the same things that you are going through or went through in terms of how to deal with it? And I want that to be in 5 words.
Really, as Baba says, the storms are gifts. If we can embrace what's coming at us, it becomes magic, there's no doubt. Embrace, not resist. Yeah.
I would say that nothing in the world is a problem. Don't look at the situation as a problem. Just have trust and faith in Baba and He will fix it for you.
My Baba always have His companion, then everything will be solved.
All moments are significant and all scenes significant and in a sense insignificant if we're in the right frame of mind. So in terms of the war, it's maybe constantly here, or peace is constantly here. So
again, answers of 5 words or less, or a little bit more. In your experience of help from the BKs, or the BK as a family responding to your situation, is there something else that they could have done that they didn't do? Or they could have done it in a different way? You know, something they could have done they didn't do, or something that they did do but could have done it in a different way?
100% or multi-million, honestly speaking, nothing more, nothing less, really, everything was excellent. And thank you, Gayatri, because it was a very short communication with you, but really very powerful. It's like a stamp.
Baba says, "Yes, Srimat, be humble and be humility. So if anything come in front of you, be humble and be humble." Shanti.
Gayatri, when you asked this question earlier, I thought absolutely nothing more could have been done. I was so cared for, so looked after in every possible way. When you had just asked now, there was one thing came in my mind, that a lot of the initial burden in the hospital went on one person, and to organize the food and, you know, to coming in. And there was a little bit of tension I sort of caught in the room at that one point. I don't know what else could have happened differently, and I don't know behind the scenes what the story is, but it didn't impact to me. I was completely and absolutely cared for. My family rung in the middle of, you know, the next morning immediately. Every detail beautifully looked after. Everything. Really.
I just feel less visitors would have helped me. But it's always good to have visitors. But sometimes, you know, I had to put the sign, you know, no one between 2 to 5 p.m. But, you know, on some days there are like 20 people standing in my room. It's nice, but sometimes as per doctor's orders, it's not good to have too many visitors. But it's just family's love, I can't help it. Thank you.
There is a sign up on Marvindra Bhai's door that says, "Visitor, before you visit, please call this extension." So I agree with you, less visitors. And finally, before we close in Baba's remembrance, your question. You know, you have these waha moments, right? So the question is, how do you continue? What's life after? What's life like after the waha drama, waha baba moments? Again, short.
My experience is that the waha baba, waha drama moments exist around a consciousness. You know, I could have an operation and it wasn't a waha baba, waha drama moment at all. I was ready to surrender into Baba and whatever, wherever he was taking me, whatever it meant. Where I've lost the wa is when I've got attached into certain positions or judgments or roles, or, and that's when it's disappeared. So I don't think there's a following a waha. I mean, maybe there's a following a war, but I think it's a consciousness, you know? If you can really, I feel it. The more I hold the consciousness of surrendering to Baba Gaya as my guide, totally, magic continues to happen, and it's just, my life is filled with wah, wah, wah. It's not a scene or a situation.
I feel after you have experienced wah, Baba, wah, or wah, drama, wah moments in your personal journey, just wait for the next one.
In eastern province, in Sri Lanka, the Baba children find it very difficult to open Gita Parsala. There were only two centers. And after the tsunami, Baba has opened 7 Gita Parsala. Many more people took the knowledge. This is Baba, Baba, Baba drama.
Um, drama is very rich for all of us and the whole planet, very rich. Definitely also in Beirut, because it looks like the war is going on, so I can't really say it's an after thing. But what comes to my mind is that let me always have this attitude of absolute trust and faith in Baba, that I will never feel a little bit of unloyal when I see that everything is wonderful at the end, if it makes sense what I'm trying to say, because sometimes we lose our faith, and then when things come as Baba has told us that they are, you feel, okay, I passed, but not fully, not 100% all the time with full faith. So my lesson is to have 100% constant faith and trust.
Of course, you're invited to continue the conversation one-on-one with these very, very wonderful souls who accepted to open their hearts and to tell us what lies deep, deep within those hearts. And ultimately, what we found to be in their hearts is one Baba, one strength, one support, and of course, they were embraced by the arms of the Brahmin family. So thank you very, very much. You've enriched our lives. And you've given us a lot of tools to work with when we have to face similar situations. So let's close in Baba's remembrance now.